4, 5.
Make one tape for me. Introducing, or how, what the procedure is when Don Young comes in.
Test, 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
The secretary on the table.
It shouldn't be a problem, though, should it? But they can't do anything about it. 74. Northern Printing Company Incorporated. Do I keep reading? Okay, well, let's see. I need some. The Argon chair was designed to work for you. We realize that you don't work well if you don't sit well. That's why Herman Miller produced the Argon chair, a chair designed for how you sit as well as how you should sit. The Argon chair takes its name from the science.
House, please come to order. For the roll call, I would like to welcome all the members back to the second session of the 10th legislature. Very sorry that one of our members is not here today, and hope he will be with us soon. Would the members please register their presence by voting? Clerk, please take the quorum.
Nine present, one absent. What happened?
Members, please rise for a prayer by our chaplain, Pastor W.D. Kirk of the Glacier Valley Baptist Church.
Grace, by your mercy.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I move Madison Avenue that the Representative Carter be excused from calling out today and through Friday, the 13th.
Hearing no objection, so ordered. Representative Swanson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that today's prayer be spent on the ground.
Hearing no objection, so ordered. Would the clerk please certify us to the correctness of the journal?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the final supplement dated June 25, 1977.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that this body approve the journal and final supplement as certified by the chief clerk.
Hearing no objection, so ordered. Brings us down to introduction of guests. Members have guests to introduce to the chambers. Representative Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, I have a special guest here today in Gallery B. The lady in my life, my wife, Diane.
Are there other guests for introduction? Representative McKinnon.
Mr. Speaker, during the interim, I had the good fortune to acquire an instant family, and I'd like to introduce them to you today, my sons Tim and Tyler.
Are there further guests for introduction? If not, are there any messages from the governor?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Communications?
It's a memorandum to Speaker Malone dated January 6, 1978. Subject, joint session. I have been advised that Don Young wishes to speak to the legislature on Monday, January 9, primarily regarding D2 land claims. Pursuant to our conversation, please consider this a request for a joint session, January 9, 1978, at 2 p.m., for the purpose of hearing Congressman Young. If you concur, I would very much appreciate a message from you to be read into our journal on Monday. Signed, John L. Rader, President of the Senate. I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of resolutions?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Bradley?
Speaker, then I don't have to make the formal motion for H.J.R. 43 to be not introduced.
No resolutions for introduction, Mr. Bradley.
Thank you.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills. Representative Miller.
Speaker, before we get into the introductions, perhaps I might refresh the memories of the members what the procedure is on our first day. On this day only, it has been a practice of the House that additional members may sign on as co-sponsors on bills unless a member has indicated that he doesn't want any additional co-sponsors on his particular legislation. So therefore, today, we are asking the chief clerk to hold all of the bills that you'll hear read and introduced in a few minutes in her desk, on her desk, or in the office for 45 minutes after we recess this session. Of course, we'll come back this afternoon, but I'm not talking about that time. That'll be the final adjournment. But after we recess for the morning, the clerk will hold all bills for 45 minutes unless you as a sponsor designate you don't want co-sponsors on your legislation. You can go to the clerk's office and sign on as co-sponsors for any bills that are read across the desk. I might announce at this time this afternoon, of course, we will be having a joint session. If members have legislation, additional legislation, that they would like to introduce today, that legislation should be placed in the basket on the clerk's office by 1 p.m. And if it's in there by 1 p.m., we will read it in during a very short business session following the joint session.
Introduction of bills.
House Bill number 553 by Phillips, an act relating to licensing of speech pathologists and audiologists and providing for an effective date.
refer to the Committee on Health, Education, and Social Services.
House Bill Number 554 by Phillips, an act relating to obscene and sexually explicit materials.
Judiciary.
House Bill Number 555 by Osterbach, an act making a special appropriation for a study of Alaska's fisheries taxation law and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance.
House Bill Number 556 by Swanson, an act relating to the Alaska Longevity Bonus and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill Number 557 by Gardner, an act relating to employment preference for local residents and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Judiciary.
House Bill Number 558 by Duncan and Miller, an act extending leaves of absence to certain temporary employees of the state.
Refer to the State Affairs and Finance Committees.
House Bill Number 559 by Swanson, Bennett, Bradley, Brown, Carpenter, Dankworth, Freeman, Hayes, Lathine, McKinnon, Meekins, Parr, and Smith, an act making a supplemental appropriation to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, Interior Division, for delineation of a utility corridor and railroad right-of-way for extension of the Alaska Railroad and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill Number 560 by Duncan and Miller, an act amending general requirements of state personnel rules to define temporary employment requirements.
State Affairs.
House Bill Number 561 by Anderson, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Public Works for the construction of a health and family services center in the village of Kipnick and providing for an effective date.
Health, Education, and Social Services, Finance.
House Bill Number 562 by Duncan and Miller, an act extending the benefits of group insurance to certain temporary employees of the state and its political subdivisions and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill Number 563 by Swanson, Bennett, Bradley, Brown, Carpenter, Cooper, Hayes, McKinnon, Malone, Parr, and Rode, an act relating to the location of connections and interchange facilities in certain pipelines and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance.
House Bill Number 564 by Duncan and Miller, an act extending the benefits of the public employees retirement system to certain temporary employees of the state and its political subdivisions and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill Number 565 by Duncan, an act relating to eavesdropping.
Judiciary.
House Bill Number 566 by Anderson, an act relating to beaver trapping and providing for an effective date.
Resources.
House Bill Number 567 by Miller, an act relating to powers of the Legislative Council.
Judiciary.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, inasmuch as we don't have any citations for action by the body today, this might be a good day to explain how our new citation designation will work. Members will remember that during the joint session we had on rules during the last session of the legislature, we created a new instrument, hopefully to cut out a lot of red tape and a lot of state expense, and that is for a document to recognize excellence, for a document to recognize and memorialize people or organizations, whatever. We created something called a citation, and during the interim, the Legislative Affairs Agency designed this citation. There's an example of it, if you haven't seen it, on the bulletin board just outside the door here. I think they've done an awfully nice job. It's the state colors, blue with a big gold seal, and it's got blue ribbons and everything hanging from it. The procedure for introducing a citation is very simple. It doesn't even have to go through the clerk's office. It can, if it's more convenient for you to drop the citation in the clerk's basket as you would a bill or another resolution, that's fine. But actually, it goes to the rules chairman, Mr. Cotton. So the clerk, in this case, if you drop it in the basket, that's fine. She'll just transfer it to the rules chairman's office. Or if you want to, just take the citation request down to the rules chairman. The rules chairman will then place it on the calendar, just as he would any other piece of legislation, the rules committee will. And it'll come up, it'll be noted on the calendar for the particular day that it comes up. A copy of the citation will be available on your desk, but it will not be, you know, it will not go through all the red tape of having a number being engrossed in half a dozen places all over the state and take up space in the lieutenant governor's office and everything else. There will be one copy of all citations filed for the record up in the Legislative Affairs Agency. But if anybody has any questions on that, you can see me a little bit later.
There's no calendar for today. That brings us down to unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business to come before the House? One item I'd like to mention now is that sometime in the next couple of days we'll be appointing a number of special committees. Some of those will be growing out of the interim work that was conducted. Those haven't all been sorted out as to which will be necessary and which are not. But we'll not be appointing the special committees at this time. Are there any special orders? Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like the privilege of the floor.
Mr. Urien, you have the floor.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, in order to convince you and members of the majority party that things that I and other members of the minority will do this year, I spent a lot of time to spread the rumor that I was a nonpartisan person to put you at ease and Mr. Miller at ease. And I know that's to convince you that whatever I say is really in your best interest. And I want you to know that the minority party is here, and after a nice summer of rest, we're ready to go to work. We're working as 15 members strong, and we're going to help you put an end to this session in considerably less than the rumored 300 days. And we are available to serve in any capacity that you see fit. As chairman, for instance, of the committees that you will appoint tomorrow or the next day, we will be glad to serve in the majority position on various free commerce committees, because I know your members are very busy doing other things. But we are ready to serve, Mr. Speaker, and it's good to be back.
Thank you, Mr. Urien. It's good to have the minority back with us again this year. Someplace over this last year, 1977, I must have missed something, because I never quite felt at ease with you in the position of minority leader, and certainly don't expect to feel that way this year, but I do look forward to working with you. We'll take your recommendations regarding appointments to committees and free conference committees under advisement, of course. Representative Swanson.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, pretty hard to follow Rick in his first day address, but I would like to be a little more serious and talk about a couple of pieces of legislation that I pre-filed, and I did not have a chance to contact all the members of the House. House Bill 559 is to return the funds to the Department of Transportation for the work on the railroad connection between Fairbanks and the Yukon border. Last year, the governor saw fit to redline most of that money out. And that's just to put that money back in and get the railroad back working. The other bill, and I did not have the opportunity to travel throughout and talk with the members of the House, is to put the proper facilities and connections in the gas line at this time, to make it mandatory. Morris Thompson told us in Fairbanks that he wanted to know, and the Elkin people wanted to know, what the state of Alaska was going to do with their royalty share of the gas. He said, we have to know, because we have to design that line now. This piece of legislation would be a directive to design that line so that the state of Alaska could take its 1/8 royalty share of the gas out in Alaska. I think that this is probably one of the most important pieces of legislation to come before this legislature, because this is future Alaska or future economics in Alaska. Regardless of where that connection goes, if anywhere in Alaska where the petrochemical facilities will be built, this piece of legislation is the number one thing that has to be done. I would hope that every member of this House would join me in the authorization of this bill. Thank you.
Excuse me, Representative Parr, we have a delegation from the Senate. We accept the notification with pleasure, and the House will be looking forward to working with the Senate. I'd like at this time to appoint a delegation to call on the Senate, inform that the House, whether or not organized, is ready to do business. I'd like to have Representative Chatterton, Representative Smith, please to call on the Senate. Thank you. Representative Miller?
May we be at ease, Mr. Speaker?
House stand at ease. During the House, please come back to order. During the at ease, Representative Miller reminded me that the delegation that we appointed to call on the Senate at the adjournment of the last session of the legislature, for various and sundry reasons, were not unable to keep that appointment, the major one being that the Senate had also adjourned at that time. So I'd like to change the appointment of the committee to having the responsibility to call on the Senate to include the same members that should have had the pleasure last session. That would be Representative Freeman and Representative Bennett. Representative Urien?
Mr. Speaker, I note in the reading the journal that on the last day, one of the last entries says that these two gentlemen didn't return. Hopefully that won't happen again today.
And I'd like the committee of Representative Chatterton and Representative Smith to call on the governor and advise the governor that the House is organized and ready to do business. So if that committee could take their leave at this time. Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, may I have the privilege of the floor and the special orders?
Mr. Parr, you have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, the Legislative Council appointed an interim committee on retirement, of which I chaired this past session, and we have turned in a report to Legislative Council. In the interest of economy and of not adding more paper to all members' desk, we did not make distribution to all members. But I would like the members to know, anyone who wants a copy of that can obtain it from Mr. McKinnon, the Administrative Assistant to the House Committee. And I think you may find some interesting points in it.
Also under special orders, I guess, one of the points that was raised by Representative Parr at the Legislative Council meeting on Saturday was a need to coordinate efforts, particularly in the area of retirement legislation, between the two committees that are committees usually a first referral on the various pension funds we have, and would recommend that strongly we follow up on a suggestion. Representative Miller?
Speaker, as long as we have our delegations out, we can't conduct a lot of business. If the members will remember, during the last session we had trouble with the voting machines, and there is a person from the voting machine company in town and will be around today to make sure the thing is working properly. In order to make sure that the thing is working properly, we won't have any roll calls today. I'm going to make just a couple of facetious motions so that we can all vote Perhaps two or three members will even change their vote, because it was at that stage, if you remember, that the thing really kind of broke down last year, and we'd like to assure ourselves that it is working properly. So I will move at this time that this body commend the minority leader for his choice of location in spending the good share of the interim in the waters, the scenic waters off Southeast Alaska.
There being no debate on the question, the members may proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote?
Mr. Speaker.
Does any other member wish to change his vote? Representative Rhodes? I'll change my vote. Representative Urien? Representative Duncan? Representative Anderson? Hope this isn't a harbinger of things to come. Is there any other member wishes to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Yeas, 21 nays, 6 non-voting. It's not working.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
With regard to the test of the machine, there's one thing we didn't test, and maybe the pages where I was working on it afterward might. Sometimes the numbers don't coincide with the way the lights ended up after the change of votes. We had some pretty embarrassing problems in that regard last year, too.
I've already noticed two things wrong.
Representative Miller.
At ease, Mr. Speaker.
House, please stand at ease.
There's two things wrong.
Our delegation has returned from the Senate with good news, from the governor, I'm sorry, with good news, I hope. Thank you. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, the machine apparently counts right, but it doesn't... It doesn't record right, so maybe we ought to do one more. This time, let's say only two or three people change their vote, but so that we can advise the guy from the machine company that's here, you know, we can show him exactly what's happening. So just for the sake of doing it, I'll replace the same motion I made a moment ago and ask the members to vote.
Representative Meekins.
Speaker, I have an amendment. I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that the motion is amended to commend him for his choice in hairstyles.
The amendment's out of order. Ready for the question? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Representative Anderson? Does any other member wish to change his vote? Representative Bennett? Representative Phillips? Does any other member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Twenty-seven yeas, 11 nays, 44 not voting.
that answers our questions. Representative Anderson?
But maybe we've got to vote on an issue of substance.
Representative Urien?
Was that substance or subsistence?
Well, I think that answers our questions on the voting machine, at least for the time being. This situation was worked on during the interim, and my understanding is that the company responsible for the installation and maintenance of our system had assured us it was in working order. However, they're here. Hopefully the problems can be corrected before we have to vote on an issue of substance. Brings us down to announcements of committee meetings. Representative Miles?
Mr. Speaker, there'll be a Democratic caucus on adjournment of the morning session.
Representative Parr?
Mr. Speaker, since we apparently have several afternoon functions this week, the Hess Committee will not meet this week. This will also give us time to notify the people back in the home territories as to which bills are coming up. Our first meeting of Hess will be next Monday.
Representative Urien? Representative Brown?
Speaker, there will be a short meeting of the Labor Management Committee tomorrow in the committee room, room 207 of the Assembly at 8:30 in the morning, and we'll talk basically about what we're doing this year and a few things we did last year. There'll not be a bill calendar on the agenda.
Representative Gardner?
Mr. Speaker, the Judiciary Committee will not meet today, but starting tomorrow on the criminal code at 3 o'clock or right after the governor's message, whichever would come sooner.
Representative Cooper?
Mr. Speaker, the Finance Committee will meet this afternoon briefly after the joint session.
Any further announcements? Representative Miller?
Speaker, reminding the members again that if they want to bail on to any of the bills that were read, they've got about 45 minutes to do so. And reminding the members also of the joint session this afternoon, I'll move and ask unanimous consent this body stand in recess until 2 o'clock.
I'd like to make that 1:55, if we could. There's no objection. House will be in recess until 1:55 p.m.
Test. 1, 2, 3, 4.
test. Ladies and gentlemen, test, 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 test.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, it's ordered. Representative Miller.
Mr. President, I'll ask unanimous consent the roll call of the House be waived and all House members be shown as present.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, it's ordered. I'll appoint Representative Kelly and Senator Ferguson to escort Congressman Young to the chambers. While we're waiting on that, Congressman Young's appearance, let me inform at least the Senate members present that the House intends to send us an invitation to meet with them Friday for purposes of considering the vetoes that followed the last session. The joint session will stand at ease. Certainly welcome Congressman Young to these chambers. He's no stranger to this House nor to the State Senate. I hope that Congressman Young, if you will be available for questions at the conclusion of your prepared remarks. I know that the sentiment was expressed in the Senate. Some senators think they would like to be able to ask questions. Of course, that will be up to you to handle that in any manner you desire. So without further ado, I present to you Congressman Don Young.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, I am glad you asked me for the time for questions afterwards. Rarely does a politician turn down times of which he can convey, hopefully, knowledge to his fellow workers, so there will be times for questions. I'd also, before I get into my prepared remarks, like to say it's an honor again to be back at the Appellate Hall. I have in my office on the wall a resolution passed by this body commending me for my service in the Alaska State Senate and the House, and especially my very meek manner in the caucuses. I've changed little my caucuses in Washington, D.C., although I do not stomp as badly as I did here. At least they know where I stand on an issue. So it is again a pleasure to be here today to speak on the opening day of the session, to speak before, I think, probably one of the most important legislatures in the United States today, the Alaska State Legislature. President Rader, Speaker Malone, good friends, and all Alaskans, again on the opening day to be honored with the privilege of speaking before you, to me is a great privilege. I had a thought, though, before I spoke, before I made the speech up, I thought about the times that I've raced for this seat, three times in 72 and 73, and I went from a senator to a representative. Many people could not understand that. The titles don't mean much to me, very honestly, and not to poke fun at my good friend, President Rader, that is one problem I have when I refer to him as Mr. President, because when I mention Mr. President back in Washington, D.C., I think of a mouthful of teeth, and John doesn't have that. Thank you, John. As I open this speech, and I will try to stress this, you are not an ordinary state legislature. You are the legislature of the state of Alaska. And the actions that you take here will have an effect all the way from Point Barrel, Nome, to Wall Street. I know that you have many problems, and I'd like to refer to them as challenges this session. You have an oil tax problem, you have a permanent fund problem, etc. But more than that, you have a problem and a position I believe you must take. And that is a position on Alaska's resources. Now, as you well know, many people in the lower 48 and in the world as a whole are interested in Alaska's great resources of oil, gas, minerals, fish, timber, and also scenic and recreation resources. It is our duty as elected representatives of the people to bring both sides of the polarized position into a position of acceptance on both sides. Now, I'm going to speak to you today primarily on one subject. And that is the subject of D2 lands, or Alaska National Lands, as they are referred to in the lower 48. You've heard me talk about this for approximately 5 years, and even preach about it. And I say, yes, preach about it. And then tell you one more thing, in all sincerity, my wife says that I even talk about it in my sleep. And as long as that's all I talk about, I'm in good shape. I think that we have to recognize that the problems of the D2 lands is far more reaching than one might think. We are going to be dealing with the United States government, a landlord, an absentee landlord that's overbearing and cumbersome. I will tell you, in the lower 48, many of my fellow men despise and dislike the overregulation of the overgovernment, and they are with us in sympathy. Even those that would like to put the state into parks and refuges do not like the manner in which it is trying to be done to it. They do not like the idea that Alaskans are being ignored. I will say that, you know, what happens in the lower 48 is overregulation. It was like an Alaskan who visited Washington, D.C. and asked the cab driver to take him on a tour of the town. As they passed the National Archives, the visitor noticed an inscription on the building which says, "What is past is prologue." He looked a little puzzled, so the cabbie explained, "That is bureaucrat Washington, D.C. talk, for you ain't seen nothing yet. What is past is prologue, but I would like to briefly cover the progress, and I say progress, we have made on D2. On January the 4th, 1977, the first day of the 95th Congress, Congressman Mo Udall introduced H.R. 39. Which put 147 million acres of Alaska into instant wilderness. That told us what priority the chairman of the Interior Committee gave the D2 land issue. For a while, he began to pick up co-sponsors. And I've heard it often referred to by certain environmental groups that we have a great overwhelming support in the Congress. But he has only 75 co-sponsors out of 435 members. I do not call that an overwhelming mandate of the Congress. we were able to stop the implication or the co-sponsoring of any other members on that bill. Next, the chairman, Mr. Udall, rather than referring H.R. 39 to the public land subcommittee, where it would have been voted down, Mo Udall decided to create a new subcommittee to handle the Alaskan land. From a legislative standpoint then, gentlemen and ladies, we almost started at a ground zero because of Mo Udall's maneuver. John Cyberling from Ohio, of course the subcommittee chairman, and I am the ranking member. Being the ranking member of the minority has its rights, and I have used those rights, I do believe, to the benefit of Alaska. I can assure you that for the past year, the past 2 years, most of my time has been spent on the D2 land legislations in Alaska. Hearings, of course, were held in Washington and across the nation in Atlanta, Chicago, Denver, Seattle, and finally here in Alaska. Hearings in the lower 48, with the exception of Seattle, were pro H.R. 39. This was simply because this legislation is the dream of organized preservation. They turned out with many witnesses to testify in favor of making enormous areas of this state in total disregard of Alaskans into parks and wilderness areas. 90% of the witnesses had never been to Alaska. As we began to hear from people who knew more about Alaska, we began to get more balanced to the testimony. The hearings were a good educational process for the members of the subcommittee. You could see the attitudes begin to change as the hearings progressed. The best educational experience for the members, of course, was the 4 weeks that the committee spent in Alaska. Not only was the testimony good from Alaskans because they heard from the people who lived on the land and knew it well, but just as important, the congressman had the opportunity to first see the land and the vastness of the great state of Alaska. Udall and Cyberling subsequently to the hearing began talking about special definitions of wilderness for Alaska, access across federal lands, subsistence hunting, and other changes most Alaskans want. Some, by no means all, of these changes have been included in the subcommittee print of the bill. We have, with the help of all Alaskans, made significant progress in bringing some of the balance to the extreme position of H.R. 39. We have come a long way since January, when Mr. Udall thought a bill would pass through the House by June. Now let's look at the timetable of D2. I would like to make one point perfectly clear, not to be plagiarized from my man in Clemente. It is only to the advantage of the extreme preservationists to quickly push a bill to the House and the Senate. If that were to happen, which it will not, they would be guaranteed instant wilderness by legislation. Even the December 1978 date is not sacrosanct. If we do not meet that deadline, the only thing that will happen is that D2 lands will revert to D1 lands and come under the jurisdiction of the Department of the Interior or the BLM. Under certain conditions, that would not be bad. Another point of importance, I hope that no one buys the line that we could make one-third of Alaska into a park or a wilderness area and then change the land status if a particular need arises. Once the land in Alaska is classified, it would take a national disaster to gain access to park land. I say we should plan for multiple use now and not wait until it's too late. I cannot tell you how critical this issue is to the future growth of Alaska. Yes, I said future growth. Growth with planning, not by environmental damage. Cyberling and the Pro 39ers say that the state will have 103 million acres of land, and the natives will have 44 million acres to do with as they wish. But I ask you, what good is that land if we cannot use it? As an Alaskan, as our way of life. What good is it to Alaskans if we can't hunt and fish and trap and use it for recreational purposes? What good is it if we can't plan it for future economic bases? We cannot ship our oil, our minerals, our agricultural products if we are not allowed to build roads or pipelines across federal land. Fisheries enhancement will not take place if we are not allowed to construct hatcheries in the spawning channel. We must remember that 129 million acres, one-third of our state, will be in wilderness or wilderness study classification. This means no roads, no pipelines, no access, no Alaskan way of life. Our permanent fund, which you're going to be dealing with, which depends on continued development of our non-renewable resources, will not be replenished. How can we develop our renewable resource industry if we do not have the money to do so? Even more important is the Alaskan's right to manage its own resources. Under the so-called H.R. 39, our land, our fish, and our wildlife will be managed by a bureaucracy located 5,000 miles away in Washington. We're still suffering from this sort of non-management in the fisheries field that occurred when Alaska was a territory. Do we honestly want to return to territorial status and shrug off the long and hard fight for statehood? The latest issue, and most of you I hope have read the Reader's Digest, the articles about who is going to own Alaskan land, ask the question at the conclusion, whose interest should come first, the 400,000 Alaskans or the 216 million other Americans? The answer supplied was it is now in the interest of the 216 million Americans and not Alaskans, as if we're not Americans. Actually, what they're saying is let's, as our society and democracy, shove aside a minority. Let's forget Alaskans. Let's do what we think's right for the best for the majority. And I say that smacks of Big Brotherism of I've never heard before. But let me ask the question, is it in the national interest to deny the American people the vast wealth of Alaska natural resources by setting aside the most scenic areas, the best wildlife areas, and allowing for multiple use in the remaining areas, we can fully meet the needs of all Americans and all Alaska. And let me remind my friends in the lower 48, again and again, we are Americans as well as Alaska. Some of our native leaders in Alaska have endorsed H.R. 39 because they feel that they were treated or will be treated more fairly by the federal management than they have been by the state. I would just like to remind them of recent federal actions in regard to the ban on subsistence waivers. This is only a small sample of how federal management works. A bureaucrat sitting in a warm office in Washington cannot understand the needs of a whaler in Point Hope, a fisherman along the Yukon, or a caribou hunter in Anacubic Pass. In most cases, he won't even try to understand, but will happily strangle the subsistence hunter and user in regulations and red tape. And this, too, must be made clear to all Alaskans. The D2 lands issue is bigger than all of us, and this means it goes beyond the political differences we may have. I do not believe the people of Alaska will stand for anyone using this issue as a political football. Now I'm asking, what should the role of the Alaska State Legislature be on the Alaska lands issue? First and foremost is support for the Alaska delegation in Washington. I do not mean total support because there will always be differences of opinion. But let's resolve those among ourselves before a presentation is made to the Congress. We may be outnumbered population-wise, but if we stick together, I have found that Congress, to a great degree, will honor the wishes of the individuals most affected by legislative action. However, as the famous quote goes, if we do not hang together, we hang separately. Next, we must make the 216 million Americans aware of what is at stake here. A start has been made in this regard by the D2 Steering Council. They are working on a film strip and it has been completed, which will be shown to interested groups. I frankly say it is not enough. They have asked for $900,000. It is a drop in the bucket. And as an Alaskan taxpayer, I have no objection to the expenditure of $5 million and yes, even $10 million if necessary, to keep Alaska out of the hands of the federal government for single-use purposes. This may sound like a lot to you, but consider. This year we're going to elect, let's use round figures, approximately 500 United States senators and congressmen. The minimum or the average expenditure is $100,000 per candidate. If my figure's correctly, that's $50 million. And I think this state can afford $10 million to get the message to the lower 48. If we do not, the enactment of H.R. 39 and a loss of $12 billion worth of minerals, billions of barrels of oil, untold amounts of agriculture and fishery products, and most important, we will lose forever the Alaskan way of life that we all cherish and why we came to Alaska. a life of freedom and a life to be on the last frontier. I am one of the leading advocates in Congress of reduced spending, but now is not the time to be penny wise and not have any sense. I ask that these dollars be appropriated by this Alaska State Legislature as the first order of business of this session, and that it be immediately signed into law by the governor. And I ask that the money be spent in the following manner. Number one, institute a nationwide mass media public education campaign conducted at grassroots level. This must be used to bring the facts surrounding the D2 issue to the rest of America. Gentlemen, the Congress is informed, but the public is not. And it is time at this state and this state legislature inform the public with factual information, not opinionated, and the effect upon our lives. Number two, organize an Alaskan speakers group who can speak across the nation to people of all walks of life. This should be composed of trappers, fishermen, miners, bankers, conservationists, yes, and even legislators, and any other who live in and have the desire and the first-hand knowledge to carry the message of how the 400,000 Alaskans feel. Number three, and one of the most important ones, although far-reaching it may be, extend, with the monies I ask you to appropriate, an official invitation from the state legislature to all 100 members of the United States Senate and their wives to visit the state at our expense. Consider the impact. We have already seen the benefits of having the members of the subcommittee in Alaska lands to our state. It is now time for the Senate to learn what D2 is all about. Number four, extend that same invitation to those members of the House of Representatives who have not yet visited Alaska, so we can keep all parties informed, because it's a long ways between now and the finalization of H.R. 39, if it ever becomes a reality. Number five, and this is meant to be a little critical, do not spend these funds on junkets or activities that will cause additional in-house expenses. It has to be to appear that the state legislature, as representatives of the people of Alaska, are sincere in their efforts of trying to convey the messages to all of the lower 48 public. We must show our commitment to achieving the solution of the D2 problem, and not just show an ability to spend money. Friends and fellow Alaskans, let's put our money where our mouth is. I'm doing everything in my power to produce a reasonable D2 bill. It is up to you as state legislators to do the same. This is my assessment of the present situation. You may not, or you may, follow my recommendations, but the worst thing that could happen would to be do nothing. If that should happen, and the people of Alaska do not like the result of the D2 legislation, I hope everyone can say that they did their best for all Alaska. Above all, I believe we're going to win the battle. But we must also look to the future. And if the outcome of the D2 battle is not as we see it, we must know what effect it will have upon the future resources of the state. There will come a time when the oil and gas will run out, and when future development may cause excessive environmental damage. Now, I've been accused by some of being the champion of the developers, wearing a black hat, of being a rapist who seeks to deflower this virgin land with bulldozers and oil wells. But my contention is now and has always been that properly managed development can take place without destroying the state of Alaska as we know it. The first chief forester of the U.S. once said that conservation is development. And I say we engage in conservation, not preservation. In the past few years, we've seen the pendulum swing from development-oriented attitude to a preservationist-oriented attitude. Business has learned to toe the line and begin to make aware of the environmental consequences of its actions. It is time for the preservations in this state and nationwide to be aware of the social and economic consequences of their actions. The pendulum politics must stop. Otherwise, we will swing back and forth forever and never go anywhere. We must learn to meet in the middle and work together for wisely managed growth with proper recognition of both usable resources and scenic resources. Now, some Alaskan environmental groups have realized this, and while we do not always agree, I must commend them for having the courage to take a closer look at what they are doing and what they are advocating. It is time to make our decisions now, this year, this day, this time. Not with emotions, but with knowledge. I hope and I ask that you join me with providing this knowledge. And I ask you, my fellow Alaskans, fellow legislators, to do what is right for Alaska. Together, we can. Thank you.
Do we have any questions of any members?
Those who are asleep ask me a question. Now?
Thank you. I don't know if I missed part of your speech, but could you tell me what your position is on the transfer of lands that already belong to the state of Alaska, and the lands that should be transferred to the regional corporations and the people that have filed for allotments under the Native Allotment Act? And what impact will the Meads bill have on what you're trying to do?
In all the bills, there's been acknowledgement through my efforts, and it came from this congressman's office, that the lands of the state will be transferred in title, and the lands of the natives will be transferred in title. The administration's position is it will not be the total lands, it will only be the core township. We are trying to work out a program by which all lands, if it was to become a reality, all lands immediately would be transferred in title. The administration of this state has worked very hard in picking out the remaining lands. The original bill of H.R. 39 was introduced, and those preservations supported it, revoked statehood selection and even native selection. So we have made progress in that direction. As far as the native allotment, that is, as far as I'm concerned, the Department of Interior's boondoggle. They have objected to most of the allotment requirements or applications, not on grounds of merit, but mostly on grounds of just being obstruction. Any questions? Hello, George.
Mr. Anderson.
Nels, are you running for something?
No. I plan on running for governor.
Thank you, Nels. Thank you.
No, I did ask you another question regarding the Meads had indicated an interest in putting forth his own bill.
Yeah,
and
Lloyd,
what impact is that going to have on your efforts?
I frankly think that Lloyd Meads will be more in line with my beliefs than anybody else yet that has entered a proposal. He has been a friend of Alaska, and I'm sad to say he's not running for re-election. He has helped us numerous times, and he has a real strong feeling that what was attempted in H.R. 39 was a disservice to the American people, especially to the Alaskans. And I believe we're going to have a bill that some areas I won't agree with, but overall will be a much better vehicle than what is being supposed now. I see 11 candidates cited for statewide office. Ought to be some of you like to get on TV. Any other questions?
I'll ask.
Go ahead, Dr. Burns.
But, you know, Alaska has 120,000 plants, and in a sense, the state has locked it up. We still have 99.9% of the land.
I just missed the garbage can.
You know, how does Congress feel about, you know, giving the state more land when we already lock up what we have? And the second question would be, if, how can we complain in one sense about the Fed wanting to lock up land when we, the state, lock it up ourselves?
Well, Mike, I didn't sign your petition, but I probably should have. But I will say this. I will tell you, Mike, that that is one of the problems we have, that the state, because of, frankly, not allowing more people to have privately owned land, has given me some problems. I think Lloyd Meads is going to attack this problem. Not on the state level, but I think you're going to see a possibility of a provision within his bill of having a certain amount of acreages open up for public home siting for public use. Now that raises a hackle on every preservationist I know of, and even some of the agencies. But we have to recognize that there's something wrong in the boundaries of the state of Alaska. When we're paying
$40,000 and $50,000 and $60,000 and $75,000 for a lot, and then have to build a home that's cost $75,000 to $90,000 for a home. Well, we're in a state of 375 million acres of land. There's something wrong. There's a balance. It's out of whack. And it's time that we don't want to face a real social problem. We've got to start dispersing people outside of the communities that are so congested today. I have had people on the environmental side tell, look at the congestion in Anchorage. And Anchorage is congested. But why is it congested? Because we've been rammed up against the side of a hill. We can't get out into lands that are not federally or state owned, so we can disperse the people. And if you want to have a social problem, go into Detroit and Michigan and Washington, D.C. and New York. Why do they have a social problem of crime and illnesses? Why? Because they're crammed together. And there's something wrong when Alaska, with that much land and this few people, are crammed together like they are in New York. And we have to face that problem. If we do not, I foresee in the long range this great state as we see it, very frankly, be in a state of distress and destruction. Starting to speak.
Dr. Yes. Dr. Burns.
Senator?
Kane? Don, your remarks about fish and game really got my interest there. And many of us do fear that the federal government is trying to take it back, take it away from us. We'd be right back where we were before statehood. How do you see this battle shaping up in Congress?
This is part of the battle, okay, that is really a hidden one. The people supporting H.R. 39 are the people that do not believe game should or could be managed. And they want to manage it supposedly on the federal level, which is no management at all. And I believe the state has to do two things. Number one, retain the management of all wildlife in the state of Alaska. But number two, recognize, and I say this in somewhat jeopardy, recognize that a state as large as ours cannot operate with a single board in a single area. We have to have areas which have different geographical locations, different cultural problems, have different boards, different concepts, but keep it in mind that we are managing the wildlife for the benefit of the wildlife, and that's something we have to do. It will not happen under the federal government, and they are seeking to do this, and it is one of the major battles. I think we have support on the other states' level, though, against the concept of federal management.
And that brings up another item. Do you see any hope of our regaining any of the management on that have gone to the federal government under the Sea Mammal Act?
Well, I think we have already gained some of it, and I predict we will gain more of it as time goes by. It was an emotional issue when it was passed, and I think we made a bad mistake at that time. It's not going to happen overnight because those that want the federal government to non-manage the game are still very strong, but I don't think they're going to have the ability to obtain new inputs. It'll be a little longer before we get anything back there.
Congressman Young, there seems to be a contradiction. Every year the federal delegation comes, and at least since I've been here, and expresses the belief that the perception of Alaska and the South 48 and with your colleagues in Congress is that we're overly rich and possibly irresponsible. You're asking, and I do believe that the D2 issue is, as every member here does, and Alaskans do, is the critical issue vis-a-vis the federal government. How can we mitigate this this contradiction when you're advocating, and probably reasonably so, that we appropriate $10 million, but additionally invite every senator plus his wife up here, every congressman, and I guess his wife, to be only equal. Now, isn't that going to give the impression that in fact we're is there any jurisdiction in America that's ever done that? And don't get me wrong, I think that it's a reasonable idea. It doesn't bother me. However, aren't we going to connote to the people of the South 48 that in fact suspicions confirmed we are richer than they ever had had dreams of being, and in fact the membership of your body in the U.S. Senate?
I don't believe this in this case. We, and I'm going to confess to you,
we're not the first state to do this. New York has done it. And New York invites the Congress up on it too. And if you see what's happened in New York, it's broke, but the mines are going to the trough. So it's not the first time. I would say, really, what's going to happen, though, in my own opinion, as an Alaskan, is they're not going to be at least a bit interested in the $10 million invitation as far as being rich, because this is an important issue. We can show them why it's so important, why we're willing to spend the money. I think they're going to watch other actions that this legislature is going to attempt to make and do. That they are going to watch. And capital move is going to be one of the utilization of our resources as we are allowed them under the Gas Act and under the Oil Act. They're going to watch how we use those funds. That's what they will watch. That's the Wall Street watching. And they will be very much interested in what action this body takes. But as far as the $10 million, it won't look like a rich guy's play toy. Now, you may ask why the state, it gives the state credibility. These, you are the elected people. And it means that you are asking, you're not betraying or giving them untrue facts. You're asking them to come to the state to see this state and the effect upon each Alaskan. That they understand. That they believe in. And why wouldn't they come under a congressional junket? Well, very honestly, if you're not on a committee that's directly related to resources or fisheries, they are, you know, put to task to explain why they travel 5,000 miles. Well, why not have somebody else pick up the tab? Why not some of the special interest groups, the Chamber of Commerce, the unions, or the oil industry, the fish industry? Because they won't come under those stipulations. But the state, you are the bona fide elected body, and they will come at your invitation. I can just about guarantee you 100% participation if the invitation comes from this body with the $10 billion which we appropriated with the media campaign. Now, some of you may say, the media, why is that necessary? After all, the House and Senate are going to vote. That is true. But they only respond as congressmen and senators when they begin to get pressure from their home front. And as I mentioned to you before, even those that want the parks and refuges don't like the way it's being done. And even though we're only 400,000, they will listen if our side on the constituency level is betrayed. The congressmen now are listening to what Senator Stevens and Senator Gravel and myself are saying. But there has to be that extra push from you through their constituents. And that's what I'm asking. My time is your time. There he is. Al, how are you?
Just fine, Congressman. Yeah, when we were down in D.C. on the D2 Steering Council, I talked to you about, I'll talk about my own district, let everybody else talk about theirs, then I won't get in trouble. But I have an interim committee on bottom fish. And my study was just completed the other day, and it'll be available to anybody that wants it, and they can talk to Diane Nelson, my assistant administrator, and get a copy of it. In that study, it showed a $5 billion fish export from the state of Alaska. And if they're going to turn the Aleutian Islands into a wilderness, game refuge, it would take up all our harbors. It would take our hydroelectric power away from us, which you all know that diesel oil is going up. It takes oil to run plants, to run boats. Right now in Sandpoint is selling for 64 cents a gallon. I expect in the next couple of years it'll be up around a dollar. When you're looking at boats that's burning about 100 gallons an hour, you're looking at a lot of money. And shore plants, you have to have big diesel plants to run cold storage and the facilities to run a bottom fish plant or whatever you're looking at. And if they turn this Aleutian Islands in, which is will be one of the richest fisheries in the world if we ever get it going. So I talked to you about the Aleutian Islands, and I would like to find out what you found out about that. If it's going to be all a wilderness, game refugee, and keep the processing plants from coming in there.
Al, I frankly think it's going to end up in refuge and not wilderness. That's my indication. I can give you an example of what you're saying is absolutely true. And contrary to what people say, if it goes into a wilderness designation, you will be precluded from your on-base operations and hydro projects and any other type of establishment, even for processing purposes. And else is written into the bill. Now, this is where Lloyd Meads comes in very strong. He says, if you're going to have a wilderness, you're going to have a wilderness. But don't try to make it halfway. And he says, if there's another use, it shouldn't be a wilderness. So I have a great deal of faith that most of the congressmen are going to follow those guidelines. And one other thing, you know, to show you what can happen, we have a case out there right now where one island, I maybe should not bring this up, but one island is being proposed for a goose sanctuary. And the fish and wildlife were going to poison the foxes. And that caused a big hue and cry. And then we tried to get some trappers on there, and we ended up being a lot of non-qualified trappers in ADAC were applying for it to trap the fox. And some of the local people were precluded because they couldn't get a permit. And now it appears now, because of all the boondoggling going on, that if they're going to have a goose sanctuary, that the foxes will still be poisoned next summer when the furs are of a little value. And I brought this little story forth because it gives an example of the inability of an agency to really manage a resource. And Al, I can tell you, as far as the fisheries, the bottom fisheries in your area, I'll do everything in my power to see that you're not precluded from that activity.
One more thing, I'd make the last comment. The state and everybody wants onshore plants, and if this goes into law where we can't put plants on the beaches, we're going to have floaters, and what we're trying to do now is try to act against the Russian, Japs, and Koreans, what have all the floaters out there where we get no revenue from, and that's in my study on the bottom fish. And like I said, it should be looked at very closely, because if we're excluded of these lands, we won't be able to harvest that $5 billion export of fish, which will top our pipeline right now. And I thank you.
Any other questions? I don't like to drag this out. No other questions. I'm surprised with all my statewide candidates, they said we didn't have some more questions. Free opportunities. I want to thank all of you members again, and before I ask to leave you, I would again congratulate you and wish you luck, support, and this very, very important session. I, as I mentioned in my speech, can't believe, and I served in this body 7 years, that there's ever been a more important, that you're not going to be dealing with a great many issues I know that are more in the forefront possibly right now than even the D2 land issue. But again, I ask you in all sincerity to think of the future and how Alaskans will be able to live in this state if H.R. 39 was to become a reality as written. And to take this one piece of action and to act upon it immediately, to put your faith in the concept of Alaskans have a right, that the Congress must be informed of that right, and the people of this nation are informed as individual Americans, as members of this state. If you do that, and we are successful, we will accomplish things far beyond our dreams. If you do not act, and we suffer the consequences of an H.R. 39 as written, your children's children will look back upon this 1978 legislature and wonder where you are and where the Washington delegation was. So I'm asking you that. Thank you very much.
Is there any further business to come before the joint session? Senator Coletta?
Mr. President, I move adjournment.
Before we adjourn, let me announce that the Senate will meet briefly in the Senate chambers for adjournment purposes only. Is there any objection to the motion for adjournment? Hearing none, it's ordered.
House, please stand at ease. The purpose of this brief session this afternoon is to take care of any remaining announcements that may be for the membership, as well as complete the introduction of bills for the first day of the session. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent this body revert on the calendar to introduction of bills.
Hearing no objection, the clerk revert to introduction of bills and resolutions.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 83 by Osterbach, directing the Legislative Council to conduct an analysis of Alaska fishery taxation policy.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Please.
House, please stand at ease. Please come back to order. Clerk read for first reading, House Concurrent Resolution Number 83 by Osterbach, directing the Legislative Council to conduct an analysis of Alaska fishery taxation policy. The resolution will be referred to Resources and Finance.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 84 by Osterbach, relating to an alcoholism treatment facility on Umanak Island.
Health, Education, Social Services, and Finance.
House Joint Resolution Number 43 by Gardner, relating to withdrawal from Social Security coverage by policemen and firemen.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Joint Resolution Number 44 by Osterbach, proposing amendments to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to the Attorney General.
Judiciary.
House Joint Resolution Number 45 by Bradley, requesting assistance from the Alaska Forces Radio Network in covering the Arctic Winter Games.
State Affairs.
I have no further resolutions for introduction.
Introduction of House Bills.
House Bill Number 576 by Bradley, an act granting service credit in the public employees retirement system or the teachers retirement system for employment at Alaska Methodist University and providing. Excuse me. I'm out of order. House Bill Number 568 by Osterbach, an act providing for the establishment of an Alaska State office in Copenhagen, Denmark.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 569 by Osterbach, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Fish and Game to transplant caribou to the Aleutian Islands and Shumagin Islands and providing for an effective date.
Resources, Finance.
House Bill 570 by Osterbach, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Health and Social Services for a feasibility study of an alcoholism treatment facility on Umnak Island and providing for an effective date.
Health, Education and Social Services and Finance.
House Bill 571 by Osterbach, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Education to construct swimming pools and providing for an effective date.
Health, Education and Social Services and Finance.
House Bill 572 by Osterbach, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Fish and Game for travel and per diem for the Board of Fisheries to meet with advisory committees and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance.
House Bill 573 by Osterbach, an act amending the Commercial Fishing Loan Act and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance.
House Bill 574 by Osterbach, an act relating to commercial fishing loans and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance.
House Bill 575 by Osterbach, an act making a special appropriation to the Legislative Affairs Agency to obtain information concerning the potential utilization of production credit associations by Alaskan fishing and agricultural interests and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance.
House Bill 576 by Bradley, an act granting service credit in the public employees retirement system or the teachers retirement system for employment at Alaska Methodist University and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs, Health, Education, and Social Services, and Finance. It's not a shotgun referral on that bill, but it does affect two separate retirement systems that are normally referred separately to the two standing committees.
House Bill 577 by Bradley, an act making a special appropriation to the Office of the Governor for costs of broadcasting the Arctic Winter Games and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
We have no calendar for today. Brings us back down through to unfinished business, special orders, announcements. Representative Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There'll be a Democratic caucus tomorrow morning at 9.
Are there any further announcements? Representative Miller.
Before the adjournment motion, two announcements. Number one, I'd like to ask unanimous consent to Representative Brown to excuse him to call the House on Friday the 13th. And Mr. Speaker, a number of members have asked what time on the local station here, KINY, that Capital 78 would be shown each evening. That'll be on television on Channel 4 or 8 at 6:30 p.m. Each night. No further.
Is there any objection to the motion for excuse from the call for Representative Brown on the 13th? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Representative Osterbach.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There will be a Bush caucus meeting after adjournment, and if anybody wishes to get on any of my bills, I imagine they can do so like the Speaker announced earlier today. Thank you.
Representative Cooper.
Mr. Speaker, could we revert to announcements? Maybe we're still there.
That's where we are, I guess.
Mr. Speaker, I had earlier announced a Finance Committee meeting at the termination of this floor session. However, there is a Bush caucus, and I would, rather than keep everybody waiting up there, I'll just cancel the meeting. We'll meet instead tomorrow, and I'll announce it from the floor at that time.
Are there any further announcements? Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent this body to stand adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Hearing no objection, so ordered.